everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, engineering and producing the show. We welcome you on this Tuesday, the 13th of January, 2021. Tom, I guess I got caught napping. We normally cover everything, you know, the geraniums, and somehow I was under the impression it was not going to be enough to freeze the bird bass. That's my gauge of whether or not we got a freeze up at the house, and we got one this morning.
Did you see the birds skating on the bird bath this morning?
No, but there was pretty good thin, sort of thin sheet of ice on all of the bird baths at our place, and that's the first time this season that has happened. And hopefully there won't be much damage, because it probably wasn't for very long that it was freezing.
Well, the weather forecast is we're warming to the 70s, and the overnight lows should be around 40.
Good. So I don't have to worry about covering up anything over the next couple of days. We're entering week two. We are in week two of our 11th year on the radio in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. It's 10:30. Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. We have worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, where we piggyback the live feed from KVOI.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Now let's go on the live line to the Vice Mayor of the City of Tucson, Paul Cunningham. Paul, how are you?
Doing as well as can be expected, Bill. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, before we talk about the latest with COVID, is there going to be a city election in 2021, or are we going to go to...
Hard to say.
Yeah.
That's up to the Supreme Court at this point, the Arizona State Supreme Court. To me, it's not just a question of whether or not there should be an election. To me, it's a matter of whether or not cities are autonomous and cities have local control. I think that's the bigger issue here. Is a city charter sacred? Is a city charter not what the framers of that city wanted? And we've got to be cognizant of that. So I think that question has been presented to the Supreme Court. I think there's a few justices that have absolutely already made up their mind, and they're incapable of being objective. I think Clint Bullock's a great example of that. I don't think he has any business being on the Supreme Court, but whatever. That's his prerogative. But the other justices, it seems they are at least objective in this discussion, and they actually think they're actually deliberating. They're being deliberate in their decision-making. I was really encouraged by the questions that the different justices ask at the hearing, and they seem inquisitive. So there's only one justice that I think stands out that has predetermined his decision, and that's, you know, what you get. But I think the other justices are all open to hearing the arguments, and we'll see what happens. I think if they do change the law on Tucson, they will do it where 2021 will carry on, because we've already called the election, and they'll only change it to 2024. So that's what I think.
That was my next question for you. So you think we will, even if they say we've got to go to even numbered years for the City of Tucson elections, you think that we would go forward and have it this year?
Well, I think that's what we'd ask. I mean, say we know we're going to lose, we'd go back to them and say, at least let us hold this election that we've already called and give the voters some advance notice. And I think that would be a reasonable request. So if it goes to that compromise, it may go to that compromise, but they may just shut it down altogether. It was a very craftily written law that said we had to meet a certain level of turnout. The ironic thing is we almost did. So those are the pieces to it, and we'll go from there. But that is, quite frankly, that's the least on my mind right now.
I know, but
it's been an interesting fight for the last 10 years, and now coming up on it, it just seems so petty considering what we've been through in the last year.
I know, and I did want to get, I wanted to cover it though, Paul. And so now we'll talk about COVID. And as you know, the news broke really right before my show at noon yesterday that the CDC wants states to make sure that people over 65 are now pushed basically the top of the list. Anybody over 65 should be getting this vaccine. And so far, I haven't seen anything, a reaction from the governor's office, Pima County. I know they had a news conference about an hour ago talking about this schedule. They're still on the phase schedule. There's nothing that I've heard about this this new recommendation for 65 and older, Paul Cunningham.
Let's go with three different logistical things.
Okay.
So we have the people living in congregate care, and so we have situations where people living in congregate care already have their appointment, and CVS and Walgreens are facilitating those vaccination administrations on site. In other words, the CVS truck pulls up, it gives it to the nurses work on that site, they go through the protocols and deliver. So you're going to have a situation where people who are living in congregate settings have already gotten scheduled, and now to pull them off the list to do something else may be working backwards. But the way that system was supposed to work was that congregate settings could schedule their on-site administration of the vaccines as early as like December 21st. And they just, as each setting scheduled their appointment, they got pushed farther and farther back. And then what's happening at this point is, which is interesting on that, is that the supply chain has improved, which we talked about last time I was on the show. As the supply chain improves, the logistics improve. And so the supply chain improves. So now you have sites that were supposed to get vaccinated on the 15th or 16th, and they're saying, hey, we can get you a day early, or hey, we can get you a week early. So we'll see kind of how. Then we've got the second track, which is the healthcare workers. That's been facilitated for a month now. At Banner and TMC, they are pretty much done. They are set to be able to take 625 people a day. That's going to be the original plan was them for to be 6B, and they were going to start with people over 75 in that 1B priority. And I think they're ready to go and make that transition and jump. We saw that it crashed a couple servers in Maricopa County on Sunday, so we're going to have to figure that out. And I think they're nervous about starting that process until the two other sites are open. One site will be at the Tucson Convention Center, and one site will be at the Rialto Racetrack. I think both the county, state, and city officials are going at breakneck pace to open those two sites, hopefully by Monday. And then we will be in a position where we'll be able to do first dose for 3,200 a day and have capacity for 3,200 a day second dose. And remember, that second dose is a big piece of this, is that you've got, for every first dose you get, you got to have the second dose ready. We can't have people hitting their 21 or 28-day mark for their second dose and not have vaccines for them, because then we've just completely wasted the first dose. So and let's be honest, you know, a day late or 2 days late ain't going to kill you, but why take any chances? So those are the pieces to it. I think our team has worked really hard to help the county, Pima County Health, and collaborate with our healthcare providers locally so that we have an organized rollout. We have a rollout that, as I said, is I'd rather be on the ground and be a little disorganized, and we just need to expect the fact that 10 to 15,000 people are going to try to register in the first hour. And know it happens every year when people sign up for KidCo. It happened right when we launched the first testing. If you remember, we launched testing back earlier this year, and people got all mad. They said, look, I just went on to test at UDAL or Keno or wherever, and it's going to take 2 weeks. And I said, all right, we know that's going to happen for the first 2 weeks. And then it will kind of level out, and everybody, it'll be a 2 or 3 day lag. And I think that's where we're going to get. And I think I'm anticipating that's what we're going to get. And we've got to be deliberate in how we section it off. But the first, everybody over 65 all of our first responders, social workers, and 1B workers and teachers are all going to, bottom line is, my goal is for all of them to be vaccinated by March 1st at the latest. At least get their first dose by March 1st. I think it'll be faster than that. But again, it is a Herculean effort. It isn't just supply, which we don't have control of. The state has control of that supply, and the feds supersede that control. Then we have logistics where you need freezers that freeze at regular freezing temperature, and then you need other freezers that can go 80 below. Then you need personnel. And right now, because we kind of let this thing get away from us a little bit, every single hospital and healthcare personnel is at the hospital. That we, you know, we don't have bed capacity at some hospitals. It's starting to wane a little bit. It started to turn the corner a little bit, but as everybody knows, it's been a struggle. And really quick, while it's on my mind, our former TOSC board president, Mike Hicks, passed away last night.
Oh, it's horrible. I know. Horrible news.
I want to send out my condolences to his family. That's the first locally elected that's been running in recent years that passed away. And it stings, whether or not he's on a different aisle or not. That guy was always nice to me, and we always had some constructive conversations about his son.
Oh, I liked Mike. Yep. I liked Mike a lot.
This has been this has ravaged us for a year, and it will be a year. March 15th or so will be a year. But just think, if by March 15th we've got, you know, 250, 260,000 people with their first dose in and another 200,000 to go by May 1st, if we can get there, that does achieve a modicum of herd immunity. You're seeing it in South Dakota. South Dakota has hit about 9% vaccinated. There's a two-day lag on the numbers that are reported. So okay, They're at about 9 or 10% vaccinated. But the other thing that they were struggling with was that they had been 12% infected. So they have a whole bunch of people that developed antibodies. And the spike of their infection was rather recent. So a lot of their people recently got antibodies.
All right. Paul, hold on, will you? I don't know if you're in the car, but if you can just hang on, we're going to take a break right here because let's talk about something that's very pleasant. How about Mona's Danish Bakery? Paul, could you go for a Danish Kringle right about now?
Man, I can always go to Mona's for a Danish Kringle, and especially when she's got the extra ones. But either way, that sponsor of yours has been, you know, feels like since you've been on the air, and I've actually gone to the place because of her sponsoring that show, and it's just a great thing. It's become a Tucson institution.
Thank you very much. Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. There you have it. Owner and chief baker Steve, a testimonial from the vice mayor of the city of Tucson saying Mona's has become an institution. Mona's Danish Bakery, their website, monasdanishbakery.com. Home of the Danish Kringle, open right now for lunch. Stop by and check out those wonderful pastries. Ask for the Buckmaster favorite, and that is that giant topped blueberry muffin. Just thinking about it, I could use one right now. We'll take a break right here in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Be right back.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show as we are plunging into year 11 here, had kind of our anniversary a week or so ago. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, our live line presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go back now on the live line to the Vice Mayor for the City of Tucson, Paul Cunningham, who, if you're just tuning in, Paul has made a prediction that was music to my ears. I think he said, and we'll get a confirmation, that everybody over 65 who wants a shot and everybody that's in the first phase here will be able to get their first dose. Did I hear you say March 1st?
I said that's the goal. I think a more realistic is April 1st. I don't
okay
do that, but it depends. It's everybody who wants it gets it, and that there's variables in there, like how many people don't want it right now but will want it later. I mean, there's so many things we can't control there. What I do know is that at max capacity, we can get to about 4,000 shots administered per day in Pima County, and in 100 days, that's 400,000 people, which is a significant amount of the 640,000 people that we predict we need to inoculate.
How are we going to get that vaccine into that many arms, though? Are we talking 24/7 like they're doing up at the Cardinals Stadium up in Phoenix? It's a drive-through deal, 24/7. How are we going to do it here?
Four sites, 12 hours a day. Is it four different sites at 12 hours a day?
Will you need an appointment? Is an appointment the best way to go, or would it be just kind of show up?
Well, I'd prefer we do appointment system at first, and then we phase into the walk-ins. And I think the way we do that is we do it the same model we use to – we do the same model that we used for testing. If you recall, we kind of invented – we used LabFinder software. We partnered with Paradigm Laboratories, and – pretty much anybody who wanted to get their test could get one within. And right now, again, we're back to within 24 hours, you can get tested. So you put your name in, you register up on your LabFinder, you can get a slot within 24 hours, and you usually result back within 24 hours. So right now, that testing program has done really well. A lot of focus right now is on the vaccine, but I think we want to run for that model at least for the first 60 days or so. And then as the need kind of changes, we go to the walk, we start taking the walk-ins sometime. I'd love to be able to be in a position where we can start taking walk-ins by April 1st. That would mean that we have that 4,000 person a day capacity, but we're only booking 3,000 appointments. And as I said to you last month, it's going to happen organically, right? It's going to happen organically. It's going to be a thing where based on supply, based on how many people are vaccinated, how many people have been infected and already have antibodies, all those things are kind of, and we're slowly but surely going to see these, we're going to see the daily count go down, the daily case count go down. We're going to see the number of bed spaces open up. And it's going to be slow, but you're seeing it already where they've been on the ground in South Dakota for about a month, right when they peaked, and you're seeing them, you know, they were running in that state by itself at some at one point. They were running 2,400 new cases a day. They had 121 new cases today, no deaths, and their hospitals are back at, you know, 70 or 60% capacity after being at 99 for, you know, over 30 days. So you're starting to see it.
Let me add something about South Dakota. As I recall, just a few weeks ago, and it wasn't that long ago, their test positive rate was the highest in the country. Half of everybody that did a test came back positive in South Dakota.
Yes. So, like I, as I said, it, I think there was some human behavior changes because a lot of people were like, I don't want to get it. So they started staying home, believing that everybody had it. But the other thing that happened was they were really early out the gate and aggressive in delivering their vaccinations. So, and they had this really high positive rate. They were at like, they're like 15% positive statewide total population. And that doesn't even count the 4 or 5% of undiagnosed asymptomatic cases they had. So you're talking right now, almost 30% of that population is probably walking around with antibodies or will be in the next, you know, week or two. So as they move forward each day, you're going to see, as you watch that, they're probably about a month ahead of us is what I'd say to people. I'd say and not because we're slow on the vaccination, we're competitive with them on keeping up, but they also had a much higher peak rate earlier. So they had a higher total infection rate. So we're probably a month behind them in total people with antibodies. Watch them, and you'll be able to kind of track our progress. I'd say we're 25 to 30 days behind.
Walgreens, CVS Pharmacy, what's their role in this?
Well, right now their role is they are doing the delivery, and the way I understand is they are facilitating the congregate care facilities. So they are going to facilities of congregate care and facilitating the administration of vaccines to the workers and the residents of those facilities. That's how I understand it.
Will they have a role though can people, do you see eventually that people could walk into Walgreens or CVS and get a vaccine?
As soon as the supply chain is stabilized, I absolutely believe that.
And we've got the Johnson & Johnson. Hopefully that vaccine will be coming online in February.
Right. And so, you know, if you can add another 30, 40 million doses and get them distributed, and that, again, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, like Moderna, does not have the logistical challenges the Pfizer one does. Though, from what I understand, the Pfizer one has a little bit lower occurrence of significant side effects compared to the Moderna, and is a 1% higher in effectiveness, and also generally shows some better efficacy for people over 65. Not that as vice mayor and a lifelong social worker and PE teacher and social studies teacher did I do my homework on this.
So as far as schools, you don't see schools going back to in-person until the fall.
I don't know. Let me speak to it from two ways. As a
real quickly, we've got about 40 seconds.
As a policymaker, it's going to be tough to go back before the fall. As a teacher and a parent of a high school senior, I'd love for us to go back in mid-April and give 6 weeks to the high school seniors and pack some stuff in like school plays and proms and graduations and senior basketball players and one all-star football game. If our infection rate is low enough and our hospital beds are available, we think we got the thing licked, I absolutely think we should give those seniors that last month of school to give them something to hold on to. We owe it to them.
All right, Paul Cunningham, thank you for the time. Brighter days are certainly, if we can get through these very dark days of January, brighter days are ahead. Thank you very much. Stay safe, Paul Cunningham.
Thank you very much. Stay healthy, stay safe, and bear down. Thank you.
There you go. Paul Cunningham with us on the Buckmaster Show. Paul appeared courtesy Rincon Ventures, real estate and property management, who sponsor all of our live line interviews. The Buckmaster Show is in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, halfway point on our midweek edition, back right after this.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. Midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Boy, I missed out. I should have covered some things. Didn't think it was going to be freezing. So hopefully my geraniums will survive. If they didn't, well, no big thing. I can go over to Green Things, which launching into that, well, they've been around for a half a century. So they're starting their second half century, year 51 at 3384 East River Road. Their website, greenthingsaz.com. And of course, Zocalo Village for the great handmade furniture and the lighting and home accessories and all that Talavera pottery. Their website is ZocaloVillage.com. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And we are using the live line a lot these days, actually, exclusively because with COVID rampaging through our community, we reinstituted our policy here at KVOI to go back to all phone interviews. Hopefully things will settle down and we'll be able again to welcome our guests back to the studio, guests like Dr. Robert Hendricks, our Buckmaster Show contributor on education, associate professor emeritus at the UA College of Education, where he is the former head of the Department of Educational Policy Studies and Practice. He is a legend. He's the former superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District and named Arizona's top school superintendent in 1989. Dr. Hendricks, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill, and I'm really looking forward to be able to join you again in the studio. I miss that dynamic of being able to talk face-to-face.
And that has been
the same experience.
And I'll be real transparent here with the listeners. This has been a real, you know, from a professional point of view, it's been a real challenge because I'm a people person. I like to have the guests seated across from me. There's all sorts of nonverbal communication that goes into this job, looking at someone's eyes, the whole facial expression. And I've really missed that. And hopefully, from what we just heard from the vice mayor, Paul Cunningham, that he's hopeful that by April 1st, at least, everybody over 65 and in all of the categories that, you know, the phase one and all of that, B, C, will have gotten everybody that wants the shot will have gotten at least the first dose by April 1st. I hope so.
Well, I hope so, too. And I hope that that includes the majority of teachers, because we need to get them back into the classroom safely so that we can get a jump start on schooling after, over what seems like over a year of online instruction, which is adequate, but never the same. Never the same as the one-on-one experience that a teacher and student experiences.
I just like your opinion on this. You know, we're talking about nonverbal communication. How important is that? And you've taught at the University of Arizona in the College of Education. How important is nonverbal communication for a teacher in the classroom?
For one thing, you get a clear sense of whether students are understanding the information that you're delivering, or if they're being able to participate in the school experience, because it's not only the one-on-one with the teacher, but it's the cooperative learning experience with other students. And so losing that dynamic, losing the impact of that nonverbal experience, is a big vacuum in the total learning experience, in my opinion.
And that's what's been so difficult. One of the factors about, you know, being online with the virtual stuff.
Yeah, it's working to a certain extent. Teachers are obviously frustrated with
you know, the way that instructional delivery has been effective, judging from feedback from students and parents, you know, it's not an ideal situation. We have tried to make it work. I think we've done well, considering that we've had some challenges with the technology. We've had some challenges with how you deliver instruction in a way that's uniquely different than what we have been accustomed to. So I think we've got a much better handle on that. And I think part of the lessons learned through instructional delivery and technology will continue to be with us, even when students are back in the classroom. Because I think one of the things hopefully we've learned is that instruction and learning aren't necessarily tied to seat time, because that's the old historical way that we delivered instruction. It's called the Carnegie unit. In other words, X number of minutes in your seat was equivalent to earning certain credit hours or a cumulative hours to receive a grade. And I think we've learned that instructional delivery, students can learn in a more rapid pace. Some take longer, but we've got to be able to customize that so that students aren't simply being rewarded for sitting in their seat for X number of hours. It just doesn't make sense. It didn't make sense before COVID, and it even makes less sense today.
I want to talk about the legislature and education. For the past couple of sessions, maybe as many as four or five or even longer, education has been a top priority for the legislature. I wonder if it's now going to be backburnered, Dr. Robert Hendricks, because of the passage of the proposition that would put more money into education. Some of your thoughts.
You know, I don't know. I think school districts, you know, are really weathering a very difficult problem right now. And I think they have, in my opinion, a very legitimate concern. You know, since the pandemic, you know, the dollars that districts have received have been significantly less. And that's based on state formula, because, you know, money that districts receive are based on the number of students in attendance. We've talked about this before. You know, districts have lost students. Some districts have lost a significant number of students. You know, some of those students have gone to charter schools because some of the charter schools have been open, you know, 5 days a week. Some have gone to private schools. And then there's this looming group of students that they're the lost students. We don't even know where they are. They just are unaccounted for. They just haven't shown up. So we don't have an ideal system to really account for where those students are. And particularly during the pandemic, remember in the old days, you know, the truant officer would come to your door.
Yeah.
Well, that is a non-existent practice today. I mean, we don't know where those students are. And so, and the students that are in other schools, you know, districts really don't know if they're going to return. And so essentially, it's like every business bill, districts have fixed costs and they're getting less state aid because of reduced numbers. And so with these less dollars and students learning remotely, districts are really in a dilemma. Now, the governor gave his word to districts that that he would give them 98% of this current year of funding. This represented about $370 million. So the problem is the districts have not seen this money, because it's been reported that the state has run out of money, has run out of that additional money that they had promised the school districts. So this is a huge problem. I mean, the districts are paying their bills, but they are really skating by, you know, on, you know, a slim margin of dollars. And the districts that have been actually less negatively affected by this, and not that they aren't affected, but they're less affected, are the ones who've gotten Title I federal money, because this infusion of dollars has helped them. But to be that district, to be in that situation, you have to have a district with a large population of students that are socioeconomically in the poverty threshold.
All right, Robert Hendricks, go ahead, finish your thought, and then we'll take a pause.
So those districts have fared better, but overall, it's a problem.
All right, we will pause right here. We'll have more with Dr. Hendricks on the Buckmaster Show, 790-2040. If you'd like to join in the question, any comments or questions for Dr. Hendricks about education, we would be open to taking those right now in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. Back with you after this.
Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience prioritizing safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. Things will get better, folks. 2021, brighter days are ahead, and our friends over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, can't wait to welcome back Southern Arizonans to a beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment when the time is right. And that time will be coming hopefully very soon. But you can start your planning now, southwestnewmexico.org. There you'll find a great place. It's a great kind of a clearinghouse of information about activities like hiking in the Gila National Wilderness and visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument, southwestnewmexico.org. We continue now with our monthly conversation with the Buckmaster Show contributor on education, Dr. Robert Hendricks. Dr. Hendricks, do you like this selection for the new Secretary of Education?
You know, I do, Bill. I really applaud the fact that President-elect Biden has nominated a secretary who actually has been in the trenches as an educator. You know, since the inception of the secretary's position, there's only been one other secretary of education who has been in those trenches, and that was Arne Duncan, who was secretary of education under Obama. But Miguel Cardona, I mean, he has been up through the ranks. I mean, he's been a fourth grade teacher. He's been an elementary principal. He's been a superintendent. He was Connecticut's commissioner of education. He is very well respected. And he actually came out of a list of three finalists. The other two, while probably would have had, you know, a contributing role in the position, were both people who were high-ranking officials in the teachers' unions. And I don't think they would have had the credibility in terms of being receptive by the general public as Dr. Cardona will have. He's just going to be a good choice. But what a difficult time to become Secretary of Education. I mean, even though, and we talked about this before, even though the federal dollars for education are not the major portion of the operating budget for school districts, I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on the federal government to provide more money, particularly for these low-income students who have fallen through the cracks, you know, during the pandemic. And so I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on him to come up with additional resources, you know, to address this problem. I mean, these particularly the young people who have struggled with reading and other academic skills are going to be even further behind. And the federal dollars, particularly under the Title I program, are going to be absolutely necessary. And I think we're going to need more money in that area. Another issue I think he's going to have to deal with is standardized testing. I mean, it keeps coming back, you know, on the surface as an issue. You know, it was supported by both Presidents Bush and Obama, but I think it's time, particularly with this, I think there's going to be a pause in testing right now, because obviously any testing that we do right now after the learning gap is probably not going to be bona fide data. And so maybe during that gap, during this little pause, We take a serious relook at standardized testing and say,
because this is a reset. It's going to be a reset year. Let's face it. In many ways, it's a lost year for education. It really has been.
Yeah, Bill. States spend, you know, because this is a state responsibility to do the testing. States spend $1.7 billion a year on testing. This is, and of course, we're not just talking about dollars here. We're talking about time spent, time out of the instructional week, instructional month spent on this issue. And it's been, you know, it's been a frenzy, this testing frenzy. You can ask any teacher, ask teachers who, you know, are credible in the classroom, and they will tell you that, you know, using testing as a continuous measure of academic achievement is just one measure of how we should look at how students are learning. And so we need to change that. And maybe this is a way to do that. And then the last thing is, I think we have learned that our technology nationally is not where it needs to be. We need a completely revamped structure for internet technology, electronic delivery. And, you know, the Federal Communications Bureau, the Secretary of Education, can all work together on a federal level to get this, you know, into rural areas, to get it in, you know, a seamless process throughout the country. I think we've learned that that's a real deficit for us, and we need to do it. It's going to help our whole learning process in the future.
Yeah, because it's almost a have and have not situation when it comes to the whole online learning. I'm sure there are a lot of students in the state of Arizona that have just not even had access to computers.
That's true. And even with computers, you know, I hear lots of complaints about bandwidth and the fact that there just is not enough power or whatever it is. I don't have the technological term to explain it, but the delivery problem, even with having computer in hand, is spotty, and especially in the rural areas, but also in areas where students are, and families are economically deprived, and also where you know, multiple people in a family are trying to get on a computer service, which just doesn't handle, you know, the power, the delivery of that. So this ought to be something, as they have in several European countries, this ought to be something where access to Wi-Fi and other technological resources ought to be available for everyone.
All right, we're going to let you go. Dr. Robert Hendricks, thank you very much. We'll look forward to the day we have you back eye to eye here with me in studio. Thanks, Bob.
Absolutely. Have a good day, Bill.
Thank you very much. Coming up tomorrow on the program, Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott, the first Democrat elected in District 1 in 50 years, plus UA historian Dr. Albrecht Claassen will be with us. Dr. Claassen talking about the rise of extremism in America. He will compare this period that we're going through in America to different periods of history, going all the way back to his specialty, the Middle Ages. That's Dr. Claassen tomorrow on the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great rest of your day.